We're at the Drury Lane Theater in Evergreen Park, where actor Cesar Romero is the star of the comedy Mr. Barry's Etchings. But we'd like to change that title to Mr. Romero's Memories, as we say, welcome, Cesar Romero, to Those Were the Days.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
How about a stroll down memory lane for a moment or so?
Well, how far back do you want to go?
Well, let's go back to, let's dance down memory lane and start when Cesar Romero was dancing at the Park Central roof.
Oh, well, that was back in 1927. That's when I started in show business.
Uh-huh.
I was a ballroom team. I teamed up with a girl by the name of Elizabeth Higgins. And she was a girl that had studied dancing for years and wanted to be a professional dancer, and I'd always been sort of stage-struck. And I just graduated from prep school and was working in the National City Bank in Wall Street.
Uh-huh.
And Liz suggested to me, that because we danced well together, that we ought to be a dance team. And in those days, the popular thing to be was a dance team in the very smart supper clubs that were in New York in those days. They don't exist today. But I thought that'd be great fun because I was always a good dancer and dancing wasn't work. So we got a few routines together, gave a few auditions, and we got a job in a musical comedy called Lady Do.
Lady Do.
And that's what started me off. I danced for about 4 years.
Really?
With various partners.
Were you on the Ambassador Roof? And
The Ambassador, yeah. And the St. Regis Roof, the Club Momot, the Club Richmond, and the clubs down in Miami during the winter months. Mm-hmm. We worked all over the place.
Did you stop dancing then when you went on the stage?
Oh, yeah. I got my first part as an actor. I replaced an actor by the name of Tullio Carminati in a play that Brock Pemberton produced, who was the producer of this play that I'm doing now originally, too. And I auditioned for the role. I'd never played a part before in my life, but I had seen the play, and I had a pretty good idea what it was about. So when I went to see Mr. Pemberton and Antoinette Perry, who was the director of the play, they told me to come back the next day and to read for the part. So I went and saw the play again, and I watched Carminati very closely.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to read the next day, I gave a pretty good imitation of Mr. Carminati because they signed me up with a run-of-the-play contract. And I played the part for a year on the road. So the first part I ever played, I was the leading man.
And that was strictly...
Strictly dishonorable.
Dishonorable.
And the young girl that understudied my leading lady in it was a young girl who was just starting out in her theatrical career, and her name was Margaret Sullivan.
Margaret
and, of course,
Sullivan,
she went
course,
on to become one of the great stars of the theater and motion pictures. And I played that for a year.
And then did you... This was mostly in the... across the country.
That was on the road. We played all through the South, the Middle West, Canada. We had a long tour, about a year.
And after that, you went into another play?
Well, I was on the road and in New York. The last play that I did in New York was Dinner at Eight.
Mm-hmm.
And the following year, I came out here in 1934. Out here, I mean in California.
Uh-huh. Now, what was your first film?
The Thin Man.
The Thin Man.
With Bill Powell and Myrna Loy.
There's no Return of the Thin Man or anything?
No, it was the first Thin Man picture that was made.
Uh-huh.
And that was in 1934.
Somewhere in shuffling through a stack of notes about Cesar Romero, and there are so many notes around on your great career, I read that you were in a film called The Shadow Laughs. Does that strike a bell?
The Shadow Laughs. I wonder if that's a picture that was made in England.
Invincible Films? Is that...
You see, they change the titles when they play over here. I did a picture in England, I think it was called The Shadow Man.
That may be it.
That's probably it, yeah.
Going back.
Yeah, well, I made, I was under contract. I came out to the coast under contract to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And it was just a contract for one picture, option of another other picture, option of 6 months, and option of a year. So I did The Thin Man, and then they loaned me to Warner Brothers, and I did a picture there with Leslie Howard and Kay Francis called British Agent. So I thought I was doing pretty well, you know, being loaned out right away. And when I reported back to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, they gave me my pink slip. I was fired. So I thought I was going back to New York a complete failure.
Well, why was that? Why did they...
Well, I don't know. I haven't the slightest idea. I guess they didn't think I had much of a future in pictures, so they just let me go. And my agent took me out to Universal, and I made a test out there, and they signed me, and I was there for 3 years. And then when I left Universal, Darryl Zanuck signed me at Fox, and I was there for 15 years.
Boy, what a great 15 years that was.
Well, those were good years. Yeah. That's when the motion picture industry was really at its height, you know.
What was Hollywood like? What was it like in those
days? Well, of course, I look back on those days with a great deal of nostalgia, and they were wonderful days. We had some great people in the business, and the industry was much smaller than it is now. We were all sort of like a big family, and everybody knew each other. The major studios were all operating, and everybody was under contract to a studio. If you weren't under contract to a studio, you weren't in pictures, period. And you worked all the time. That's why the public got to know you so well, because you were constantly being seen in films. And the studios developed their personalities. They made their stars. They didn't pick up stars, already stars from New York. They created them. Like Joan Crawford, when she came out, she was a chorus girl. Rita Hayworth, I remember when she was a stock girl at Fox. Her name was Margarita Cancino. She was a Spanish dancer. She used to dance with her father. I remember Marilyn Monroe when she was a stock girl at the studio. And the studios developed their great personalities, which I don't think we have in pictures today. We haven't got the Garbos and the Dietrichs and people like that anymore.
Do you think television is providing kind of an outlet?
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all. I'm not knocking television. I think it's great. And you get a good television series, and it's tremendous insurance, you know. But I must say, I like those days when we were all under contract to a studio. It was, you felt as if you belonged someplace. Now you don't belong anywhere. You're free. You see, you can go. Although the one thing that was good about being a freelance actor was it gave you the opportunity to travel and see a lot of countries that you probably never would have done otherwise, you know. I've made pictures in England, in France, in Italy, in Spain, in India. I've been all over South America. I've worked in Colombia, South America, in Argentina, in Brazil. I've been a lot of pictures in Mexico. So, you know, I've seen a great deal of the world simply because I've had the opportunity to work in these countries. And if I'd been under contract to a studio, we'd be working at the studio.
But you had the best then of two worlds, didn't
That's
you?
That's right.
Yeah. When you were under contract at 20th Century Fox, did you ever have to perform in a film that you really didn't want to, to do?
Well, all picture actors did.
You didn't have much choice.
No. You could refuse to play a part, and then you'd go on suspension, which meant that you would not be paid for the length of time that it took to make that picture. And you, for some reason or other, you sort of didn't want to go on suspension, so you did what you were told.
Was there ever a film that you felt negatively about that turned out to be a big, big hit?
I can't think of any. No, the pictures that I was in that were big hits, I was pretty sure were going to be big hits. I can't think of doing any particular lemon that turned out to be great.
What was the kind of a role that you enjoyed doing best?
Well, I played so many different things because I was never a leading man. I played leading roles. I played leading men. I played a lot of heavies. I played a lot of foreigners. I played Frenchmen, Italians, Spaniards, Hindus, you know, you name them. I can't say I enjoyed doing playing Cortez in Captain from Castile, for instance, which I enjoyed very much. On the other hand, I had great fun doing a picture called Show Them No Mercy, in which I played a gangster, a kidnapper, and Tall, Dark, and Handsome, which was all comedy. And those great musical comedies that we used to make with Betty Grable and Alice Faye and Carmen Miranda, they were all great fun.
You were in the, at least a couple of Charlie Chan pictures.
I made one.
One?
Yeah.
Treasure Island.
Treasure Island, yeah.
That's considered by Chan film buffs to be one of the best Charlie Chan films of all time.
Well, and, that's good.
Now you know, see? Cisco Kid.
Well, I did the Cisco Kid pictures for 2 years. I did about eight of them.
Mm-hmm. Was there a sidekick to the Cisco Kid?
Yes, he was a little Mexican actor, delightful guy. His name was Crispin Martin, a little short, fat fellow. He was very cute and charming in those pictures.
Those were...
He died quite a few years ago.
How long did it take you to do a little Cisco Kid?
We made them in 18 days.
18 days?
18 days. And that was 3 weeks shooting. Yeah. See, in those days, we worked on Saturdays. We had a 6-day week. So we made those pictures in 3 weeks.
And how long would it take you to do a major feature, for example?
Well, like Captain from Castile, it took us 4 months. Mm-hmm. Tall, Dark, and Handsome, I think we made in about, I think we made that in around 32 days. But a big picture like Captain Castillo, a good 4 months, 4.5 months.
I always like to find out about the side of Hollywood that we read about in the fan magazines and never really believe, you know, from
the fan magazines today aren't fan magazines. To me, they're scandal magazines.
But how much of the material in the fan magazines of the 30s and the 40s could we believe?
Well, in the 30s, the articles that came out in fan magazines were all interviews. You were interviewed for those stories. Mm-hmm. So anything that came out, you said, you know.
And they didn't
as far as
them.
Interviews yeah. went. Uh-huh. Now, what things that were made up, you know, publicity people make up a lot of stories about people just to get their names in the paper and magazines. But the stories on the individual actors that were done as interviews were all... Mm-hmm. were all interviews. Of course, they have to make them a little colorful and exciting to read. Otherwise, things would be pretty dull. But the magazines today, they're not fan magazines. They're not fan magazines at all. They're more like, they remind me of Confidential, you know?
Scandal sheets.
It's like a scandal sheet.
Well, all right, so in the old fan magazines, we'd read a lot about the glamorous Hollywood and the Hollywood parties and things like that. Now, you just said you worked 6 days a week making a movie. While you were doing a film, did you have much time to get involved in all of these glamorous
parties? Well, years ago, when I was a young man, I could do it. You know, I couldn't do it. Can't do it today. When I'm working, I go to bed at 9 o'clock. But years ago, you know, 38 years ago, I could do a lot of things that I can't do now. And the social life in Hollywood then was much... a great deal more than it is now. There were people there that used to give great parties. Marion Davies used to give the most magnificent parties. Beautiful, fantastic things, you know, when she and Hearst had that house down on the beach. And they used to put a tent over the two tennis courts and transform the tent into whatever kind of a party they wanted, a circus or a beautiful garden or a Mexican town or whatever. It was just fantastic parties. The Basil Rathbuns were great hosts in those days. He used to give great parties. Carol Lombard, bless her, who was one of the most delightful people you ever want to know. She would throw wonderful fun parties. She'd take over the fun house at the Venice Pier and things like that. Nobody does things like that today. We don't have that kind of people in the industry, and nobody can afford to give those parties anymore. With the tax structure and everything, nobody, you know, things have changed a great deal.
Well, there really isn't much left to Hollywood as a film center anymore.
Today. No, because they make so many pictures out of the country and out of the state and out of the city.
Yeah. Let's jump from, Cesar Romero in films in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s when you were freelancing, so to speak, and not connected as a contract player at a studio, and you jumped into television. Pretty much.
Well, I had a series that I did in 1953. In 53 in New York, yes. Mm-hmm. I hosted a show called Chevrolet Showroom, which was not particularly successful, and I came back to Hollywood. And then I had a show that I did that was called Passport to Danger, and we did about 39 of them. That was all. Mm-hmm. But since then, I've done all the other shows. I don't do the guest shots on practically every show that's been on the air.
We can't overlook Batman.
Oh, no. Well, that was great fun. I love playing the Joker.
How did you get to be the Joker in the
Batman? Well, I don't know. Bill Dozier, the producer, called me and said he wanted me to play this part. And I read it, and I thought it was great fun. I said, sure, I'd love to do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he thought of me for the part, because certainly I'd never done anything like it before. But I got a big kick out of playing the Joker.
Did you have to research it? Did you look at the old comic books and check them out?
No, I'd never seen the comic strip of Batman.
Well, you did an amazing job because the Joker from the pages of the Batman comics came to life on the television screen in the form of Cesar Romero.
Yeah, well, it was fun.
You did a fantastic job with it. What was the reaction of your public to your role as the Joker?
Well, it was a good reaction, and particularly from the children, from the kids, you know. Uh-huh. And that's why the kids today know me, but they know me because I'm the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, they may not know the name Cesar Romero, but the minute they hear I'm the Joker, they know.
You have a reputation, and well-deserved, I might add, as a... one of the best-dressed men in Hollywood, in America, and in the world, I think, through all the newspaper ads that we see.
Well, I have a clothing line. I'm sort of in the business, actually. I've got a clothing line of double-knit slacks and double-knit suits and sport jackets. I was connected with an outfit called Petrocelli Clothes for about 15 years. Mm-hmm. But I'm not with them now. I'm associated with Sam Eisenberg, who his company is known as Eisenberg International. Mm-hmm. And my line is called Cesar Romero Apparel for the Man, and it's a subsidiary of Eisenberg International. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I have an interest in that, and I've always liked to dress well as, you know, I've been on a few best dress lists now and then, but they don't mean a darn thing, you know. I remember one day in Hollywood I received a phone call from the Los Angeles designers or something or other, I don't know, and they said, we have selected you as the best dressed actor of the year, and we'd like to present you with the award at a dinner at the Coconut Grove on such and such a date. And I said, well, thank you very much, but I'm sorry, I won't be able to be there because I'll be out of town. I have to go on the road. And there was a long silence on the other end of the phone. Then he finally said, oh, well, then we'll get somebody else. You know, so that's how important it was. If you're not there to be photographed for the publicity, they get somebody else.
What's next in store for Cesar Romero?
Well,
you'll be out here at the Dairy Lane?
Oh, I'll be here for 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
I mean,
two
8 weeks.
Till the end of the middle of October.
Two months. Yeah. And if I can work it, they'd like me to stay for another 4 weeks. But I don't know whether I can do it or not, because I have to wait and see. There's two pictures in the air, one that's going to be done in Beirut and one that's going to be done in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. And what's the subject of those films?
Well, the one in Jamaica is a comedy, really almost slapstick comedy. And the other is more of a dramatic type picture. So I don't know what's going to happen. I have to wait and see. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to look forward to seeing you on the screen and TV.
Well, my last picture that was released just played here in Chicago, I think, a Disney picture called Now You See Him, Now You Don't.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And I just finished a picture up in Alaska, a picture called The Timber Tramp. And before that, I finished a picture called, what is it, the something of Edgar Allan Poe. I can't even remember the name of it. But they won't be released till sometime next year.
How many films have you made?
About 99, I think, last
time.
Got
100 coming up then, huh?
Yeah, well, of course, I've done a lot of television films, too. I don't count those.
Did you do much on radio?
Not too much. I did some radio in New York before I came out to California.
As an actor on
running
shows or things
no,
like that?
No, just whenever I could get a job.
You were a guest on many programs.
Well, I wasn't a guest. I just got a job.
Oh,
you know?
I mean on the Lux Radio Theater, for example? Or
I did that out here. I'm talking about the shows I did in New York, you know. Just pick up $25.
Some soap operas and things like that.
Anything. Anything that paid you a few dollars, you did.
It was pretty tough then. You've recreated your career a little bit with us today, and you've bounced from one phase of it to the next, but in reality, there must have been some out-of-job time through.
Oh, there were many, many. Mm-hmm. I should say so. By the time I got my contract to come out to California, I was ready to throw in the sponge. Mm-hmm.
Well, how exactly did you get that contract? Did somebody...
Well, I had made a test. Uh-huh. I had done a play produced by John Golden and written and directed by Frank Craven, mm-hmm. a play called All Points West. And we were trying it out in out of town, one of the suburbs in New York, mm-hmm. I forget where. And Mr. Golden brought out one night for one of the performances a man by the name of Ben Piazza, who was the casting director for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And he came backstage after the show and asked me if I'd like to make a test for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And I said, mm-hmm. sure. He never said no, you know. You did yes, because you had nothing to lose. So I did the test, and I never heard anything about it. Months went by, and I'd forgotten all about it. And then all of a sudden, the phone rang, and my agent said, pack your bags, you're leaving for California. MGM is signing you to a contract.
Well, what was the scene then when you got out to California? I mean, were you... you were just brand new to movies, and you know the old story is, well, now we've got you out here, so you have to sit and wait for.
No, they put me to work right away. I arrived on Friday the 13th, April the 13th, and I went to work on Monday in The Thin Man. I didn't sit around at all. And then I did those two pictures right in a row, Thin Man, British Agent. And then, as I say, they let me go. Then Universal signed me right away. And I was with Universal for 3 years. And while I was at Universal, I was borrowed by Darryl Zanuck for three pictures for 20th Century, before it was 20th Century Fox. And I did Clive of India with Ronald Coleman and Loretta Young. And then I did Cardinal Richelieu with George Arliss and Maureen O'Sullivan and oh, a bunch of great people in that picture. And then I did Metropolitan with Lawrence Tibbett and Alice Brady and Virginia Bruce. And then I went over and did the first picture that Zandig did and the Fox Lot, and that was Show Them No Mercy. And then after that, he signed me up to a contract, and I was there for 15 years.
Boy, it's been a good 15 years. It's been a good...
It's been a good 38 years.
38. Is that how long you've been involved in the whole thing?
Yeah, I was out in 1934.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on a good career, and thank you for so much good entertainment all these
years.
Well,
thank you.
And we look forward to more of the same. And,
well...
We can recommend good entertainment when anybody comes out to Drury Lane and sees Mr. Barry's etchings.
Well, we have fun doing the show, and we the audiences are great. It's a pleasure to perform for them.
Pleasure to chat with you. Thank you, Cesar Romero, for recalling some happy times on
Thank
Those
you.
Were the Days.